Welcome to El Paso Primetime. Information for everyone, especially those who live in the third age.
This is the town and these are the people. This is the town where the people all stay. This is the town and these are the people. That's the way they wanted it. That's the way it's going to stay.
Welcome to another edition of El Paso Primetime. I'm Dennis Wu, and I'm joined by the law firm of Townsend Ayala and Associates, Jessica Clute, Jennifer Coulter, and Stephanie Townsend Ayala. And what we're going to do is we're going to create a series starting right now all about elder law and how it affects you and all of the little parts that go with this whole thing. Ladies, welcome to El Paso Primetime.
Thanks. It's an honor
Thank you for having us.
So, it's hard to say, let's start here, because there is so much. When you look at elder law, when you look at all of the facets around it, it's like looking at the Hope Diamond.
One of the things I like to tell people to start with, you're absolutely right, Dennis, and thank you again for letting us come today. It's an honor to be here. When you're looking at your life, think about your life as a business. How's your business going? Have you done the legal work for your business? Have you done the financial work that your business needs? What is your exit strategy? Are you going to leave it a mess, or would you like to have everything tied up with a nice bow on it and make sure that there's as little mess as possible? And so one of the things is when you start thinking of your life as a business, estate planning law and trust law, those are almost the only kind of law where an individual person gets to create law. This is the law of your life and your death. This is the law of who's going to handle your money when you're sick, who's going to take care of your medical decisions when you're too sick to care for them, who's going to be in charge of your funeral after you pass, and who's going to get your stuff, and who's going to be in charge of your estate once you're gone. So this is your law. And so you can create law that follows what your wishes are, your will be done. And so that's sort of where the entry is. I tell people, you know, you start with looking at your life as a business. And if your life is a business, why wouldn't you plan for the exit? Because we all know we're going to die someday. Mm-hmm. We just don't know how or when we're going to get out of this world. So the question then becomes, are you going to empower the people you love and trust the most to handle your affairs? That's the question.
Okay. So that begs the question, for a person who's married and has a family and a relatively secure nest egg, nice home, two-car garage, three dogs, two cats, you know, that kind of a thing. For that kind of a person to develop a strategy for the will and all of that, shouldn't there also be a plan for, let's say, long-term health care and an assisted living center just in case?
Can I take that?
Jen, yes, go ahead.
Okay. So what I actually do in our office mostly is long-term care planning for my clients. I help them get benefits. It's important that all of us figure out what we're going to do. The vast majority of people are going to need a stay in a skilled nursing facility for at least 45 days, or they're going to need in-home care. That usually lasts for at least 2 years. So for most people, if we're lucky enough to be older Americans, we're going to need some plan in place. Very few of us have long-term care insurance. So what we need to do is figure out, how are we going to pay for it? And for some of it can be through that nest egg. But if we've got that nice family, mom and dad and a couple of kids and some dogs and cats that we want to be able to take care of, we don't want to have dad spend all of his money to provide care for himself so that there's nothing for mom, there's nothing for the kids to be able to live on. So, yes, we want to be sure that we're doing good planning to protect those resources. Where we have that ideal situation with a married couple, we can do our best planning there. But there are still planning options even where we don't have an ideal situation, where we have a single person. But with a married couple, there's a lot of good options for planning for that, and we definitely want to start thinking about that as soon as we can so that we can make sure there's a good plan in place and we don't have to do crisis management. We can do planning.
It used to be in the 1960s and the early part of the 1970s where special needs were never really taken care of. And over the period of years, I've seen where special needs have to be taken care of, especially when you consider that baby boomers are turning into elder boomers at the rate of 10,000 a day. And at the upper end of that demographic of elder boomers, they're leaving at the ratio of 6,000 a day. So in that whole scene, you have people that are left behind who have special needs. How do we take care of them?
Well, there's a lot of different ways that we take care of someone with special needs depending on their age. I think what you're talking about mainly is the elderly and how do we take care of their special needs. A lot of times, you know, from the days that you've talked about where the families did the best that they could mm-hmm. to provide care for their disabled loved ones, but there really wasn't assistance out there. There wasn't knowledge. There wasn't, you know, people out there to help them plan, you know, in a smart way for their disabled loved ones. And so what we try to do is educate people about the opportunities we have in this country and now with our laws that you can utilize. And so one of the worst things that someone can do is say, you know what, my loved one is special needs. I've heard that you can't have money if you get government benefits. So I'm going to leave my money to someone else that may not necessarily need it, that is going to take care of them. Well, do we know if that person's really going to take care of them? Gosh, I certainly hope so, but that may not be the case. Mm-hmm. What we also know is that if we leave it, for instance, as a parent to your loved one, or if you leave it for someone else for their benefit, we can take care of take advantage of special rules that will benefit that disabled person for as long as they need it and give them the money that they, you know, have the money set aside mm-hmm. to benefit them so that they don't have to live in squalor, so that they can have quality lives that were not, you know, imaginable, you know, maybe even 30, 40 years ago. And now, you know, I have the great pleasure, you know, what Jen was talking about too is the difference between planning and crisis management. And part of what I do is crisis management for the firm. I do the guardianships. So when someone has lost capacity, when someone no longer understands what is going around them sufficient to employ, you know, name someone in charge of their financial well-being or their medical well-being, then we have to go through, you know, a fairly complicated process and go to the courts and get the court to approve and appoint a guardian to manage the financial and medical affairs. And so it's very important to plan, do the very best that we can to plan in advance mm-hmm. and get those taken care of in advance. Special needs trust is one of the excellent tools to do that.
And Jessica is correct. And what she's talking about is this area of law of substituted judgment. So we're going to be talking about who's going to have the legal authority to substitute their judgment on your behalf. Either you plan for it ahead of time, and I really do wish that it was a requirement and that in order to graduate from high school, you have to go ahead and execute a will, a power of attorney for finances, a medical power of attorney, and a health care directive so that you could look at your life. Everybody 18 or older needs that. They call it elder law, but really everybody needs to plan for a situation of substituted judgment. Mm-hmm. And so either you do it ahead of time when you have capacity and you sign a power of attorney, or if you don't do it, or if the plan you have or the people you named fail, then you have to go for a guardianship. But we say that there are really six legal documents that no one should live or die without. The first is a durable power of attorney for finances, where you name an agent and then an alternate to pay your bills, sell your home, sell your estate, whatever they need to do financially to take care of you if you are incapacitated. The second document is a medical power of attorney for medical needs. You name somebody who will make, you know, all the decisions about your medical care, change hospital, change doctors, whatever. The person you name on the second document then enforces the third document, which is the healthcare directive or living will. And that's where you say, say, if you're in a vegetative state, whether or not you want to be kept alive by extraordinary means. The fourth document is a declaration of a guardianship in case of future need. powers of attorney fail on a regular basis. If those fail, you need to you can name ahead of time who, if a court were to get involved in your life for whatever reason, you can say who would be your guardian. And you can also say specifically exclude certain people from being your guardian as well.
Oftentimes, a more important decision is to exclude, you know, those family members that might steal from you.
There's the one
that's in and out of jail.
So then the fifth document is the last will and testament. And then the sixth document, which is especially important for our partners, same-sex partners who do not have the benefit of a marriage, is that we have control of remains document. And that says who's in charge of a funeral. Sometimes people live together for years and years and years without legal authority. And then when they pass, the family, blood family members will come in and swoop in and control the funeral. So this makes sure that somebody, whoever you want to be in charge of your funeral, will be in charge of it. So those are those basic six documents that substituted judgment documents.
And those will be up on our website along with the episodes that we're taping, not only for this time, but future episodes as well. So if you're curious about what those six are and you just barely tuned in and missed it, don't worry about it. Come up to the website. It's there. But I have a series of scenarios to put out there. And Jessica, I want to put this one out there for you. Let's say there is a single mom. She's 50-ish,
okay.
Has a 22-year-old Down syndrome daughter. She's not planned for any of the six documents she should have. She's in relatively good health, but as we all know, tomorrow is never guaranteed to anybody. Mm. Now, the family starts to come into play with this sort of a thing. Should she pass away and leaves the 22-year-old Down syndrome daughter to fend for herself, what happens in that situation?
So when we do not plan, we end up with the default rules. And the question is, what family members care? What family members are going to make a stink? Because a lot of times you need to make a stink to take care of your disabled loved ones. What family members will come forward? It's complicated, costly. Many times will deplete any money that you might have saved, that the mom might have safeguarded for her son. You know, as a 50-year-old, that would be the ideal time for her to come plan with me, because, you know, we talk about it as elder law, but 50-year-olds, 40-year-olds, 30-year-olds, you know, what do we have? We have complicated lives. Mm-hmm. We have debt. We have children. You know, we have a lot of loose ends. Our business is complicated at that age. And so it's even more imperative that you plan it. So for that mom, I think I would divide it into two separate discussions. And we can relatively kind of divide all of our discussions in this way, that we have the financial part, life of her son, that we need to protect and safeguard. And obviously the goal is to safeguard as much money as possible. Mm-hmm. And on the other side is the medical residential decision making. Well, what we have the most control over in my firm, and honestly, the most important thing in many times is the finances. If you have the finances set in such a way to help your disabled loved one rather than hinder them and disqualify them from government benefits, then you're going to have a lot more options for good care, quality of life, and to live a wonderful life. So, you know, for that mom, we would obviously we'd care for her, because if she's sick and we don't get her medical power of attorney, then guess what? All her money is going to go towards her guardianship or her, you know, and so those are the things that we don't want to think about. But those are realistically, those are going to be the people with the worst situations are the people that we don't anticipate mm-hmm. getting sick young. So, you know, we'd get her medical power of attorney, her durable power of attorney. And we would also set up a will and a special needs trust, likely for her son. And the special needs trust would be essentially we would have money over here that would not discount him from government benefits, because we set it up according to the laws. Mm-hmm. And so for a special needs trust, then we would have to find someone to trust. It's right there in the name. Who do you trust? And then that's where we start looking to the family. Is there worthwhile family members that, you know, the first thing we say is, when they mention a name of a potential, I say, are they good with their own finances? Because they're not going to be able to manage someone else's finances on top of their own if they can't do their own. And they're more likely to steal, to take advantage if they, you know, are not financially independent. Mm-hmm. So we're looking for somebody that's good with the law, good with finances, and is responsible person.
Might I be able to pipe in there?
Absolutely.
Of course.
In that case, let me just tell you what happens if mom does not come to us first. Mom does not come to us first. She passes away as a single person. Her assets are going to go to her children in equal shares through the processes of what's called intestate succession, through the processes of what happens to you if you die without a will. That means that her 22-year-old Down syndrome child is going to inherit outright whatever share of the estate. If it's one kid, he's going to get 100% of it. If there's two, 50%. And now we have this person who owns this money. Depending on his level of capacity, he may or may not be able to handle that. But in either case, it could disqualify him from benefits if he's receiving SSI or Medicaid or other means-tested programs. It could disqualify him from benefits. And then we end up in the terrible position of having to put the money into a self-settled special needs trust. Those trusts are not ideal. They're good if we don't have another choice, but it requires us to have a parent or grandparent or the court set that up. And in this case, we know we don't have a parent, right?
Right.
We may not have a grandparent. Now we're going to have to get the court involved.
Yeah. Let's put it out there and say there is no grandparent there.
Then we've got to get the court involved. And in doing that, we're going to be incurring a lot of cost in addition to the costs of probating her estate. And it's going to have to go into that self-settled special needs trust, and that requires us to pay back the state of Texas if they're getting benefits through Texas at the end of the person's life before we can make distributions to his heirs.
Right, and so that should translate to more money, more benefits, quality of life, you know, longer life, happier life, mm-hmm. less stressful
less
life.
Court battles.
Because oh, gosh.
If the families fight, then the court is likely to go ahead and appoint a third-party guardian. In El Paso County, the state of Texas does it the worst possible way. Most states have a nice guardianship program and they have rules. The state of Texas tells every 254 counties, hey, it's a free-for-all. Do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. So El Paso County has a guardian of last resort, which is LULAC Project Amistad. And so that is the guardian of last resort who would step in if nobody else can or will or is able to assist your loved one. Mm-hmm. There is it costs a lot of money. You have to pay for it. It comes out of your loved one's estate. And oftentimes once somebody gets into a third-party guardianship, a third-party guardian, the estate is depleted very quickly, very mm-hmm. quickly. And if there's a fight – you know, if one sibling says, hey, what if the situation you're talking about, there was two other siblings and they both have money and say think that they're better suited. And so they want to fight. They go to court and fight. That happens, too.
Mm-hmm.
So these guardianships can become extremely hostile mm-hmm. and contested and can drain the estate. And that's just a tragedy when that happens.
So let me complicate the scenario just a little bit more, just so that people understand really and truly what could happen in their own family. We talked about the single mom has a 22-year-old Down syndrome child. Siblings, the two siblings are underage. One's 11, one's 14.
Mm-hmm.
Now what?
Well, you can actually accomplish similar objectives.
I had
a
client come in today with that exact situation. Oh. So what we did in that situation is we did a revocable living trust and then a special needs trust. So there's a special needs trust for the child and there's a revocable living trust for the children who are healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a special needs trust for the child with disabilities, and so their will is called a pour over will. And
all of their gift to their child with a disability goes into the special needs trust, and all of their gift to the children who are healthy goes to the other revocable living trust.
Okay. That's fair. That works.
Yeah. And you don't even have to create them while you're alive. You can just put them in your will. You can just say, I leave my stuff to a special needs trust I want my executor to create. And if my kids are under the age, if my healthy kids are still under the age of 21 or 25, I'll leave it to this revocable trust for their benefit. Either way, again, you're putting in there in your will who the trustee will be, who the alternate trustee will be. So you're putting in the substitute decision makers. You're setting them. You're not letting the court do it. You're deciding yourself.
Where we have minor children, we'll also ask the parents, if both of you should pass away, who do you want to be your kid's guardian? Who do you want to take care of them, to physically have custody of them? Mm-hmm. Let's tell the court that in advance so that we will know not just who you want to manage their money, mm-hmm. but who you want to be able to take care of the kids. For my family, right, my sister was a fraud investigator at a bank. She is an excellent person with money. She may not necessarily be the absolute best person to handle medical stuff. So for my family, it's her for finances and me for medical stuff. Mm-hmm. You can always separate things like that, but it's a good idea to know who you want. Let's not make that decision while your family is grieving. Let's know in advance. Talk to the people. Make sure that the people that you're naming are willing to serve. And let's tell the court, if we aren't able to do it, this is who we want.
That's a great point, because I'm thinking here, in this community, since we're 80% Catholic, in the Catholic Church you have godparents, godfather, godmother.
Padrinos, padrinas. Mm-hmm.
Ahí está. And what we're doing is we're handing over in a religious way, if we die, you guys take care of my kid. Okay, that's all well and good, but it's not in a contract.
Mm-hmm. A lot of padrinos are, and padrinas are in my wills. They are in the wills. They'll say, this is the godparents, but then oftentimes sometimes also in our in the Catholic, we'll name somebody ceremoniously as a padrino, and they'll name somebody else as a guardian too.
Right.
But you're right. Those are the people who come forward oftentimes in a situation where the parents have passed away, and we do see godparents come in and say, step up to the plate and say, I want to be the guardian for this child. So it is really a beautiful way to bring it in. And one of the things that we include in terms of having some sensitivity to your religious needs. Mm-hmm. It's really important. I want to go back to that third document when we're talking about the six documents. The third is the living will or health care mm-hmm. directive. And that's the one everybody might remember, Terri Schiavo. Mm-hmm. She's the lady who was in a coma for 15 years, and her parents swear, she said, she would want to be kept alive if she was in a vegetative state. And her husband swears that she said she wouldn't want to be kept alive in a vegetative state. So instead of being a private family tragedy, it became a national congressional tragedy. And it was a national tragedy because of one document, one piece of paper that wasn't signed. And so I really encourage people to think about that living will again as being a very important document. And really, if you don't leave it in black or white, mm-hmm. no matter what, your loved ones will feel guilty. If they leave you plugged mm-hmm. in, they'll feel guilty. If they take out the plug, they'll feel guilty. So get rid of the guilt. That's another thing that we're all big about, is that maternal guilt, right? and the chancla effect.
Yeah.
but it's really serious. Like, I have already made my will, and I've already prepaid my funeral package.
Thanks, Mom.
You're welcome. and so it's really important to think about your kids. Think about the people you love the most, and don't make them go see a lawyer when they're, like Jenny said, when they're just traumatized. That's right. The worst time to make decisions.
I want to say about the advance directive, a lot of my clients say, I don't want to sign something that's going to require me to be, taken off life support. And the idea of this document is not, this is the take me off life support, pull the plug document, which is what a lot of people think. You can tell us in that document, take me off life support. I don't want to be kept alive like that. And some people do. But there are some people
You can use me.
Jessica, in particular, says, who knows what medical science is going to discover in the future? Keep me plugged in. Let's be an optimist.
I'm optimistic,
about it.
Yeah, in general.
And so hers can say, keep me on, use whatever life-saving measures you can. And mine can say, that's not really how I want to live. Take me off. So it's not a document that says, pull the plug on me. It's a document that tells us what you want so that your family members don't have to make that decision. And Stephanie's right. There's no decision they can make there and walk away from feeling good about. If it's your decision, then there's a lot more peace in that, I found, for my clients to say, I don't want to take my dad off this feeding tube, but this is what he told us that he wanted. This mm-hmm. is what he's got in this document.
Right.
And I've had a lot of clients who said, it's hard, but that's what he wanted, and we want to honor what he wants. And that gives them a sense of peace that you just can't have when you're having to make that decision mm-hmm. by yourself without guidance mm-hmm. from your person. The Terry Schiavo case, $1 million and 10 years of litigation.
Oh, my
it
gosh.
It was a mess.
I have done it, you know, speaking of the Catholic Society, I've done one where we actually tailored it to her conversations with her priest, mm-hmm. you know, to make sure that she felt comfortable that her wishes were in line
that's
with her
right.
religion.
That's right. And that's the document of those six documents that includes your religious beliefs where you say, please bring me a Catholic priest. Please make sure that these rites are read, whatever you want. And your religious wishes are stated in that document. And so that's really a nice thing where you have a chance to state what your wishes are and make sure they're followed. And, you know, I think it's I had a client call me recently. He's the power of attorney for his brother who was very, very sick, but he wasn't in a vegetative state. He said, well, Stephanie, you know, you helped me make these documents and now he's on a, you know, ventilator and a feeding tube. What do I do? Do I take him off? And I said, no, he's not in a vegetative state. You don't have that right yet. You have to wait. And he waited and the man eventually did ask that the machines be removed on his own. Uh-huh. He asked that machines. And so his brother didn't have to step in and do that. But a lot of people think, hey, I don't want to sign this. I had pneumonia 3 years ago and I was on a ventilator. Does mm-hmm. this mean you're not going to save my life? And I'll tell people, no, it just means that if you are in a vegetative state, if you have been declared in a vegetative state and you're on a feeding tube and a ventilator, in that instance, what do you want to happen?
We have such a short period of time for this 1.5-hour show, so we're going to continue this conversation next week. But I want to put this out there for you guys as an idea. Since we're talking about all these documents, you turn them into a PDF. Shouldn't you, like, wear a flash drive with you in case of an accident?
I carry my HIPAA and my medical power of attorney in my car. Carry it with me on trips.
My loved ones know where I keep my documents, and my loved ones, they're pretty much in this room.
Okay.
You provide them to your doctors as well so that they have them on file.
Most of us have most of my clients and people in the third stage of life have their favorite hospital. They know what hospital they're going to go to. Make sure they have a copy of it. Yeah. They have a doctor. Make sure your doctor has a copy. You have the two agents you've named because you've named an agent and then an alternate. Make sure those people have a copy.
Right. Your agents are really the very important people in that scenario, that they need to have the information.
So it's all about a matter of trust.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
My goodness gracious, my head's swimming because I have yet more stuff to talk about, so we'll do this next week. Stephanie, Jennifer, Jessica, thank you so much for coming in and illuminating this. This is the first of a series.
Thank you.
We're
so
not going to let this go.
Thanks so much, Dennis. This is fun.
Next week, we'll continue our discussion about elder law. Deidre Wessenhauser is our executive producer, also recorded this segment of the show. Join us again next time for another edition of El Paso Primetime.